Blog Talk Radio.
Oye, Tony, avanza, son 7, no son 9. Tira, tírate, Capicuelo que viene.
Oye, mi gente, this is the Urban Jíbaro, and you're tuned in to Radio Capicu, the first Latino talk show on the internet, on Blog Talk Radio.
Radio de los grandes a mi lado con la old escuela, escuchando mis cintas de rap en español, hangueando en la avenida, munching on a mango. You don't want a tango, right through, I'm letting you know, bro, que I'm considered to be one of a kind, como el coquí. Así que make some alboroto, if you're proud of me, Puerto Rican. Chick ass is the lingo that I was freaking. Straight from the New York streets, las carreteras. I call it New York, speaking Spanglish, sin barreras. Y yo no me llamo Tito, but I'm about to take it to the puente. Cause I'm in a Boricua state of mente. So pump your hands toward the rufo, y déjame do my thing. I'm chilling, como un billing, I'm gonna be nothing a thing. And mi viejo está from, yeah, yeah. Que viva Puerto Rico,
que viva.
Muchos han olvidado. I've been doing this desde el octavo grado. Así que si tú aprecias Spanish hip hop, then I got something for ya. Porque desde el principio I've been keeping it go ya. Chiquete como sueno. Si es Puerto Rock Blades, entonces tiene que ser bueno. A la buena o a la mala. Ain't nothing for an ala. I keep the real like mama do. Keep figuritas en la sala. Listening to Hector Lavo y a Willie Colón. Not for nothing but J-Lo. Reminds me of Eddie Chacon. By the way, desde la montaña del oso hasta el parque central, hasta la calle 8, hasta los 7 lagos, hasta el paseo boricua en la avenida del doctor Don Pedro Albizu Campos en Chicago, hasta la isla del Borinquen. Más o menos esto es lo que hay para los que nos brinquen.
No te metas conmigo, boricua soy.
Yo soy boricua de cora.
Desde el morro en Puerto Rico hasta Nueva York.
Yo soy boricua de cora.
Les canta con sabor.
Yo soy boricua de cora.
A mí me saca y unos cuantos que se creen que porque yo me crié en los estados, que yo no soy puro boricua, pero están equivocados. En my ain't even sweating it, I'm chilling like a nevera. A donde quiera que yo esté, yo voy a seguir sembrando mi bandera. Saludos a todos los boricuas en este planeta. Sea donde sea, el boricua se respeta. Esta canción yo se la estoy dedicando a los boricuas mundial que se pasan representando. Yo siempre he representado desde pequeño. Siempre ha sido orgulloso de ser puertorriqueño. Siempre he mantenido a Puerto Rico en mi corazón. Desde nacimiento, boricua 100%. El Señor es mi testigo, más yo me siento como la canción número 7 en el primer CD de mi fama, enemigo. No quiero flores ni canto, solamente quiero que me entierren en la isla del encanto.
Canto, canto.
Soy boricua de cora,
con mucha dedicación.
Yo soy boricua de cora,
boricua de cora, boricua de cora soy.
Boricua de cora, boricua de cora soy. What's going on, mi gente? You're listening to the Capicu Show on this very special Veterans Day edition. My name is George Torres, the Urban Jíbaro, and today we're going to change the speed of the show a little bit and pretty much talk about a group that that has been overlooked in history. As you know, tomorrow is going to be Veterans Day, and Veterans Day is a holiday that honors people who served in the armed service, which are known as veterans, obviously. It's a federal holiday. It's observed on November 11th every year. It coincides with other holidays such as Armistice Day and Remembrance Day, which are celebrated in other parts of the world, and also mark the anniversary of the end of World War I. You know, obviously, major hostilities of the First World War were formally ended on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month of 1918. Veterans Day is not to be confused with Memorial Day. Veterans Day celebrates the service of all U.S. military veterans, while Memorial Day is a day of remembering the men and women who died while serving. So today we have a very special guest. I said before, we're going to have Frank Medina, who actually has started a movement to make sure that the 65th Infantry Regiment is recognized for their service to the United States and representing Puerto Rico as well. The 65th Infantry Unit, are also known as the Borinqueneers. And what we're trying to do today is we're trying to issue a call of action to our listeners to make sure that we have a big push to make sure that these gentlemen and these soldiers get the Congressional Gold Medal Award. With no further ado, I want to introduce Mr. Frank Medina, a veteran himself, Army Captain, Iraq War veteran, and founder of the Congressional Medal Alliance. Welcome, Frank.
Thank you, George. I appreciate you having me.
Definitely, definitely. So I'm going to tell you how I found out about the Borinqueneers. It wasn't so long ago. It was probably like 4 or 5 years ago. I was at doing an appearance at the Puerto Rican Day Parade in Brentwood, Long Island. And I saw this these guys on bikes, motorcycle guys. And older guy drove past me, and I asked him, I was like, "Yo, Borinqueneers, you know, what's that about?" So basically what he explained to me was that they're a motorcycle club that is paying homage to the 65th Infantry Regiment. And he gave me a whole history lesson that day. And, you know, it actually coincided with the time that I guess there was a documentary coming out in 2007, I want to say it was. He told me, like, you got to watch the movie. It's going to tell you a little bit more than what I could tell you right now during the parade while we're trying to drink some coke, you know, have a couple of medallas or whatnot. So he gave me a quick history lesson there. And over the last couple of years, I've seen this momentum kind of building and building and building. And I wanted to have you on the show today, the day before Veterans Day, so that we could really push and issue this call of action to help get these gentlemen recognized. So, Frank, why don't you tell me a little bit about why and how you got involved with the Borinqueneer Project?
No, absolutely, George. About last year, I conducted an honor presentation for a couple of Borinqueneers in the Orlando area. And in the honor presentation, there were other minority veteran groups, such as the Tuskegee Airmen and the Montfort Point Marines. As you well know in your audience, the Tuskegee Airmen were the first African-American pilots in the military, and the Montfort Point Marines were the first African-American Marines. So in this group, one of the Borinqueneers sees a Congressional Gold Medal replica, bronze replica, on one of the Montfort Point Marines, and he definitely taps him on the shoulder and says, "Hey, Frank, how can we get a gold medal like that?" And then I say, "Well, that's a good question. How can you guys get a gold medal like that?" So lo and behold, after a couple of phone calls, you know, creating a website, creating a Facebook page, we find ourselves with two congressional bills, both in the House and in the Senate, and lo and behold, me and you are speaking here today in this interview. So we're definitely gaining great momentum as we're heading into the end of 2013, and we hope to continue fueling this momentum as we begin the 2014 year.
Absolutely. And just for the record, for our listeners out there, the two bills that he's talking about are H.R. 1726, and S-1174. And that information could be obtained by going to borinqueneers.org. That's BORINQUENEERS.org. And you can get all the information there.
Correct, George. And also, we have a shorter domain name. It's 65THCGM, as in Congressional Gold Medal, CGM.org as well. So.
Okay. Absolutely. So I guess my biggest question is, how does a segregated unit even come to be? Like, how does that happen? How do we have a Tuskegee Airmen? How do we have a 65th Infantry unit where everybody's segregated?
Right. I guess back in those days, it was more of the cultural norm. It was just, you know, you had Jim Crow laws, you had stereotypes, whatnot, and it was just the way society pigeonholed certain groups of ethnicities, whether it was based on their socioeconomic background, whether it was based on skin color, whatnot. And it took years. It took years of just education, leaders, it's Martin King Jr., Cesar Chavez, whatnot. It took those historic game changers to definitely break those molds and definitely pave the way to racial equality in the U.S. It's unfortunate that those minority veteran groups, such as the Borinqueneers, were definitely reflective of the society's perceptions of, you know, different ethnic groups, whatnot. So that's how I believe those things came about.
So you must have had amazing conversations with some of the Borinqueneers that are still around. Can you talk a little bit about some of the people you've met and some of the stories you've heard?
Absolutely, absolutely. The Borinqueneer that inspired me to begin this great endeavor was Raul Reyes Castañeda. And I call Don Raul, I call him the Saving Private Ryan of the 65th Infantry, because he is the younger of four brothers that served with the 65th Infantry in the Korean War. If your audience doesn't remember, Saving Private Ryan was a movie about Tom Hanks, the actor. He was looking for Private Ryan, which is the younger of five brothers, and he was sent on a mission from the president at the time. So I, and analogous, I compared Don Raul to that, and I adopted him as my grandfather, quote-unquote. My grandfather passed away a couple of years back. He was with the 65th Infantry, so I definitely channel him, though Raul, as my grandfather. He would tell me one time that he was on patrol, and he wanted a break. It was so cold that he went to this tent to just get a break and, you know, to keep himself warm. You know, and then he definitely took a snooze. When he woke up, he found out that the tent that he went was a tent full of the corpse, full of the bodies, you know, from battles that they were engaging. You know, so these are some of the gripping anecdotes that I get. I get other anecdotes of men, you know, more gruesome, whatnot, in graphic detail that definitely captivated, definitely appeals to the emotions and definitely, you know, it makes you wonder why, you know, under those conditions, they definitely were able to create a lot of military accomplishments.
Absolutely. And I want to talk a little bit about those. One of the things that I found really fascinating about, you know, kind of delving into their story is that what we don't know, what we didn't know, I didn't know, was that Puerto Ricans have participated in many of the military conflicts in which the United States has been involved. We participated in the American Revolution. We participated in wars against the British. I mean, even today, you know, Latinos, Puerto Ricans specifically, are all over the world and have fought conflicts ever since. My father personally was a Vietnam vet. So we've fought in a lot of wars. In the Korean War specifically, the distinctions that I saw that really stood out to me was there were 10 Distinguished Service Cross Medal honorees, 256 Silver Stars, 606 Bronze Stars, and 2,771 Purple Hearts. That's a lot of awards for one unit. Now, do you know? Do you have any concept of how big these units, how big the 65th Infantry was?
Right. No, among its contemporaries, it was the definitely highly decorated unit, but definitely performed a lot of great military achievements to earn, you know, and as a result, those awards that you just mentioned. They were known for the last regimental size, the bayonet assault against the enemy, so they were definitely masters at hand-to-hand combat. Actually, there's an artist rendition of that last Bayonetta solo, and that's probably one of the more iconic images of the 65th, that last Bayonet assault. They're also probably one of the vanguard, one of the leading units defending the evacuation path, the evacuation quarter of the 1st Marine Divisions, and probably one of the greatest military withdrawals ever in U.S. history. And as such, they were one of the last units on the boats to retreat, you know, while everybody else was boarding. And many other critical battles, whatnot. And despite their accomplishments, we have to consider that they definitely endured and succeeded despite a lot of adverse circumstances. I mean, you're talking about a group taking them out of a tropical island, out of their environmental context, not only environmental context, but out of their cultural and language context as well. You know, most of these guys were just, you know, not urban jibaros, but rural jibaros at that. And it was probably the first time away from that. So to be able to perform under those extreme circumstances, whatnot, and then toss it with being in a segregated unit, being perceived to be of an inferior soldier than anybody else, I think that's remarkable what they were able to accomplish in that setting.
Absolutely, and I'm looking at all the people who've actually signed on already. You have a lot of support. You have a lot of major organizations. You have the National Puerto Rican Chamber of Commerce. You have the Vietnam Veterans of America. You have the Association of United States Army. You have LULAC. You have National Puerto Rican Coalition. You're gaining a lot of momentum. What is needed to take us over the threshold? What can I do? What can my listeners do to make sure that we get the word out and that we make sure they get the recognition they deserve?
Right, George. Yeah, this is the most important thing right here. This is how we're going to make history. This is how we're going to definitely make our imprint. And let me just add out here, George, that just to put it in historical context, out of 155 Congressional Gold Medal recipients since 1776, since George Washington, only one other recipient has been Latino American, and that's been none other than our very own Roberto Clemente, humanitarian and baseball Hall of Famer in 1973. So the awarding of the CGM for the 65th century would be of monumental and epic proportions here. And we're definitely weaving history in the cultural fabric of America. So how do we do this? We need folks out there to definitely get out of their comfort zones. Definitely write letters. Write letters to their congressmen, congress members, write letters to their two senators. We have an example template letter they could download from our website. That's one method. Another method is they could definitely write to on their congress members' website, write them a note, both their senators and the congress member. They could call. They could call the Washington, D.C. office of their congress member or senator and ask for the military legislative assistant, and definitely just, you know, basically to express to them saying, hey, I'm your constituent and I want you to co-sponsor Bill H.R. 1726 or Bill S1174 because it means a lot to me and it means a lot to me as a Hispanic in my culture. You don't need to be a rocket science. You don't need to be a doctor to be able to do this. You don't need to be out there doing picket lines. Those are one of the three primary effective methods. Other folks have done events around their regions and their cities. They've done honor events. They've done on the radio. Folks have written articles and op-eds on their local newspapers. Other folks have definitely done petitions. Other folks have gotten letters, you know, but hey, can you sign this letter and just collect a mass, a whole group load of letters to be able to send to that congressional office. So there's a lot of ways to skin this cat. The main thing is letting those Congress members that have not come on board yet tell them, hey, you need to co-sponsor, and that'll definitely demonstrate what's called the groundswell support. And the more we have these, especially in the critical states of the northeastern states, where I imagine you're at, and all of those states in the eastern seaboard, California and Texas, Ohio, Illinois, you know, those states with a predominantly large Hispanic population, we could definitely make our mark in those areas. But all the states are needed. No state is insignificant at that. And in our website, if you go to www.65thcgn.org, if you go in the section called Call Congress Now, it'll definitely show you an outline of these methods that I just described right now. And we also have a resource section where you can download promotional flyers, visuals. There's even a talking script you could download to help you give you approach your local congressional office. So we're here to facilitate folks, people's effort to carry this out in the local regions.
Absolutely. And what I'm also seeing here is I just looked at the last newsletter that was sent out October 16th, and you actually have a list of who's already supporting it. Do you have a list as well of people that I guess are the remaining targets that we could contact?
Right. No, that list has not been been generated. Obviously, that's an ongoing list. It'll change day to day as new co-sponsors come on board. There are a lot of resources which will tell a person which districts are not on board. They could go to govtrack.us, and it'll definitely show a map that outlines the congressional districts, and they could use the information on our bill co-sponsor compound to definitely cross-reference which ones are not. But one thing I'll add is that so folks need to contact folks not just in their state. And, for example, if their congressional district, you know, or two senators have co-sponsored, you know, don't stop there. You know, contact other friends or family or colleagues in other congressional districts which have not co-sponsored. And even mail them the letter. You know, just mail them the letter, put a stamp on the envelope, and not just look, just sign, and let be able to send it. Not only in your state, you know, try to get all of your Congress, all of your states left delegation on board. But other folks in other areas, if you know somebody in Iowa or in, I don't know, Nevada, you know, tell them to come on board. Hey, just send this letter, stamp it, or, you know, maybe make a phone call, and that's it. Sometimes it takes just a cluster of constituents to definitely convey that message to that congressional office, and they're on board. Yeah, so sometimes it's just that simple. I wish it was like that for all of them, but sometimes it just doesn't take much.
Absolutely. And you guys are doing a great job. I'm telling you, the information that I get from you guys is very detailed, very specific. You guys definitely know how to get the information out there. I'm very proud of you, of what you guys are doing. Now, what is your timeline for this? What is the ideal situation? Is it a reality? Is it realistic to even think that maybe by next year, this time, that they could actually be recognized?
Yes. Right now, if, you know, me being an engineer, we can mathematically, we are on pace to obtain the minimum amount of co-sponsors. It's obviously, it's a large number. It's two-thirds of each Congress, of the House of Representatives and the Senate. And we're at 54% roughly in the House of Representatives, and we're at one-third, 33% in the Senate. We're needing to keep this pace up until December of next year, until this congressional session adjourns. Basically, when this congressional session is over, that's our deadline to get these co-sponsors in. So we definitely need to keep an ambitious pace. We definitely need to reach out in our networks and definitely get motivated to do this. This will have a lot of ripple effects throughout the Latino society, you know, not just with the 65th, not just among Puerto Ricans, but, you know, this will serve as emotional closure for most of these veterans that left with a negative stigma while they're in the 65th, you know, that left with the stigma of prejudice or inferiority, whatnot, you know, all those, you know, tarnished episodes. This is something that will serve as revindication to those, you know, horrific episodes. And it could also bridge, it also serves as a catapult to bring other issues to the national spotlight. We're talking about substandard veterans facilities in Puerto Rico, you know, Hispanic veterans getting deported, whatnot. You know, and it, overall, it just offsets the negative perceptions of Latinos in today's contemporary media. You know, this is just a good news story among all of that negative publicity that we get. So this has a lot of potential to definitely bring us, advance us as a culture. So it's very important. It's very imperative that we get out there and we make our mark.
I got a private text message from one of our listeners, and he said he wants to make the distinction that the 65th Infantry has never left a member behind, and that's a big accomplishment with any particular unit.
Correct. That's correct.
So they never lost anybody that they didn't bring home.
Right. And even with the 65th Infantry, there's a list out there for the missing in action, the MIAs, whatnot. So you know that this will be to commemorate them, you know, and their ultimate sacrifice as well.
And I don't know if this is relevant to this particular conversation, but what does the 65th Infantry look like today?
You're meaning look like in terms of?
Is it still a majority Hispanic unit? Maybe not segregated, but maybe people request to be in it. I'm not sure how the military works, but.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. No, absolutely. Actually, no, it's great to bring up that point. The 65th Infantry deactivated in 1956. And to preserve the lineage and the heritage, they left a remnant battalion with the Puerto Rican National Guard, and it still resides today in the Puerto Rican National Guard. It's the first battalion of the 65th Infantry, and it's the only unit ever to be in that situation. So it's a unique military unit with that among all the other key facts I mentioned. And as far as the demographic layout of the soldiers with the 65th, although predominantly Puerto Rican, there were some elements of other ethnicities. There were a couple of companies of segregated African Americans. There were some Virgin Islanders. There were Mexican Americans. In fact, speaking of Mexican American, the only four-star Army Latino general, General Richard Cavazos, was a Borinquen here. And he fought the 65th in Korea, and he earned the Distinguished Service Cross, which was one of the awards you mentioned. The Distinguished Service Cross is just one level below the Medal of Honor, and he's a Borinquen here. He's still living today. He's in the Texas area. So this spans all ethnicities, and, you know, we don't know how many other ethnicities. It seemed like I'm talking here out of on a whim here. It seems like every person of skin color of other ethnicity, they just tucked them under the 65th. The Filipinos, they thought that the Filipinos spoke Spanish, so they tucked them under the 65th as well. So you know, it was a very ethnically diverse unit, combat wise, at that time. And it's, you know, this is movie type material. This is something for Hollywood to make here pretty soon.
Wow. And you know what? I got another message from Marilyn Negron in Kissimmee, Florida. And it seems like after a couple of years, they managed to dedicate a park to the 65th Infantry Regiment over on Royal Palm and Buenaventura Boulevard in Kissimmee, Florida. That's pretty cool. Thank you, Marilyn, for sharing that with us.
Yeah. And actually, you know, the 65th Infantry Regiment has about 10 memorials and monuments around the nation, whatnot. There's one in Puerto Rico, obviously, and La Calle de 65 Infanteria up there in San Juan. There is an avenue named after him, and what was the Southern Boulevard? It's co-named with 65 Infanteria. There's the park out there in Buenaventura Lakes. And just recently, I've been informed that they broke ground. They were able to secure a piece of land in New Britain, Connecticut, for a park, a memorial park, and a monument up there. So the legacy is still perpetuating. I'm glad for this, and I'm glad that you know, things like this, things like the gold medal, these mines definitely leave this legacy for the future generations at that.
Are you aware of any movie projects other than the documentary that are going to tell stories within the 65th Infantry?
Actually, it's funny you mentioned that to me, George. I've been sent a couple of screenplays to look at, but none, to my knowledge, have materialized to the degree of something. So, but I hope it does. I think this is a Hollywood caliber, and I think this, that this could definitely make a movie, make it definitely, magnify the reputation and the great prestige of the 65th. So I hope they do. I hope that Hollywood makes a movie about these guys.
Okay. So how do people get in touch with you specifically if they need you to speak on another radio show, if you need to go to a university, college, or all the activities that you're doing on behalf of the 65th? How can they get in touch with you?
Correct, yeah. You can email me at 65THCGN, that's CGN as in Congressional Gold Medal, 65THCGN@gmail.com. Or you can call me. My number is 239-530-8075.
Okay, awesome. And the one thing I will say is, we're in November right now. This is Puerto Rican Heritage Month. We're also, like I said, the day before Veterans Day. And we're going to really need your help in achieving this well-merited honor. The Congressional Gold Medal for the 65th Infantry Regiment Boricuanillas hailing from Puerto Rico. This national recognition will help highlight the service and sacrifice of all the Latino American veterans. Several minority segregated military units have already been recognized by a grateful nation. It's time for us to do our part. Please visit the 65thcgm.org website or go to boricuaneers.com. That's boricuaneers.org. And do your part today. Go in there, go into the action. The top bar has all the different things that you could do. You could also donate via PayPal if you want to support the project. I think that this is what we need to do, and we need to do it today. Let's make a big impact tomorrow. And let's have a way for Boricuas going out there and really promoting this project to make sure that the 65th Infantry gets their place in history. Thank you so much, Frank. I really appreciate you taking the time tonight, Sunday night, to be with us and share this valuable information. And I look forward to actually speaking to whatever remaining members are around to hear a little bit more about what it was like to be in this infantry and some of the stories that they have to tell.
Absolutely, George, and thank you. Thank you for the opportunity, and mi gente, the time is now. El tiempo es ahora. Okay, let's do this. Okay, let's make our mark.
Ya tú sabes. And I want to thank you folks for listening. This has been a very special episode of the Capicu Show. We'll be back in two Sundays and with a regularly scheduled program. Thank you so much for listening. And again, tomorrow's the day. We have right now. Make sure you email it. Send it to a friend, Facebook like it, Pinterest, Twitter, whatever you have to do. Let's send this information out to our friends. Let's take action today so that we could get them recognized. All right? Y con eso dicho, vamos para el Capi. Where is it? Yeah, there we go.